Well, this morning, we are returning to the Old Testament book of Hosea. If you remember, we've been going through the Old Testament book of Hosea. Hosea was a prophet of God, which means he was a spokesman for God, and he was sent to the northern kingdom of Israel. Remember, Israel and Judah split, and he was sent to the northern kingdom of Israel, and he was called to not only share God's message, but to live it out. And it was a message of judgment upon the people because of their sinfulness, but also to express God's love to them because this nation was being unfaithful to God. And in that, we saw the theme for Hosea, and it's this: God's limitless love is not always pretty, but is always ever and completely beautiful. And that's what we've been talking about with Hosea. So this morning, we'll be picking up in chapter 2. So if you want to turn there this morning, if you don't have your Bible, you can use the Pew Bible, and that is, help you turn there, page 751, I believe, Hosea chapter 2. And as you're turning there, let me give you a little bit of background. If you remember chapter 1, God gave Hosea a really shocking thing to do in sharing this message of God's love. God told Hosea to marry a woman who would become unfaithful to him. Some say she was going to become a prostitute, but at the very least, she marries Hosea and then she gives herself to other lovers. And she has children with these guys. And the actions of his wife, who was named Gomer, were a picture of the nation of Israel, of their unfaithfulness to God. And now how God calls Hosea to respond to his wife in unfaithfulness is how God wants to respond to his people. So that's what we have in Hosea here. And through her unfaithfulness and children of unfaithfulness, God pronounces judgment on Israel, as we saw in the last chapter. They were no longer his people. They would no longer have mercy. You remember the kids' names, No Mercy and No, You're Not My People. Yet. And that was because of this two-way covenant God had with his people. He said, I'll be your God. You'll be my people. You're faithful to me. I'll bless you. But then he had this one-way covenant that supersedes that says, I'll always love you. So he had this two-way covenant, and he says, if you're unfaithful, man, there's going to be consequences. But in my unfailing love, in my love for you, he says he would graciously bring them back and restore relationship with him. And that's how we ended chapter 1. And we saw that God's gracious love restores that which we've broken. So now, piggybacking on that, God takes his message through Hosea a little bit further. So we're going to pick up in verse 2 this morning. And we're just going to read, and then we'll comment as we read and see how far we get this morning. All right, verse 2. Here's what Hosea says. He says, plead with your mother, plead. So he's talking to his children. He says, plead, for she is not my wife and I am not her husband, but plead that she may put away her whoring, again, her unfaithfulness from her face, her adultery from between her breasts, lest I strip her naked and make her as the day she was born, and make her like a wilderness, and make her like a parched land, and kill her with thirst. Upon her children also I will have no mercy, because they are children of whoredom. Again, they were born in her unfaithful relationship she had. For their mother has played the whore, she has conceived them and has acted shamefully. For she said, I will go after my lovers, who will give me my bread and my water, my wool and my flax, my oil and my drink. So what's happening here? All right, Hosea is telling his children, again his children, Lo Ami and Lo Ruhama, or No Mercy and not my people. And he tells them, go to your mom and plead with her, because she's not being my wife here. And she's not regarding me as her husband. In fact, she's going out and she's giving herself to other people. And it sounds kind of harsh. It's like, man, this is pretty shocking. But this is telling you what our unfaithfulness really is about when we're unfaithful to God. So if it sounds a little shocking, good. That gives us an indication. And he says, you know, if she doesn't come back, then Hosea says, I'm going to expose her sin to everybody. And she's going to be left out in the cold. And not only that, but her sin won't just affect her, but her children and beyond. That's why he talks about, you know, and your children. will also have no mercy because they're children of whoredom. So our sin, our unfaithfulness, it affects more than just us. Never think that it just affects yourself. And then verse 5 is interesting because it kind of tells what she was doing. What's behind all this? It says, for their mother has played the whore. She's conceived and acted shamefully. She says, I'll go after my lovers for my bread and my water. What's she talking about? She's saying, I want to go out and I want to please myself. I want to do what I think will make me happy. And in bread and water, that kind of symbolizes what fills her. She says, this is what I'm going to fill myself up with, what makes me happy. My bread and my water that my lovers give me. My wool and my flax, or this is my covering. This is my security. So I'm going to go out and I'm going to seek that from other people. And then my oil and my drink is kind of like my pleasure. I want to be in control of my pleasure too. And that's what she's doing here. Now, let's continue. Verse 6 says, so therefore, because of all this, here's what Hosea says. I will hedge up her way with thorns, and I will build a wall against her so that she cannot find her paths. And again, what Hosea is talking to, he's talking about Gomer, his wife, but this is also God talking about Israel and their unfaithfulness. And what he's saying here is he's saying, I'm going to block her paths. I'm going to block her way so that she doesn't have anywhere to go. And this has the effect of not only hopefully stopping her from sinning, but it's also a means of protecting her from doing further damage. You see, there's this idea of punishment and discipline. And there's a difference between punishment and discipline. We're going to get to that in a couple minutes. But in this sense, what Hosea is saying and what God's saying about his people is he's saying, I'm going to put them somewhere where they can't do this so that they can be protected. They can't do further damage here. And I'm going to put them away, or I'm going to hedge up around them, put a hedge of thorns so she doesn't know which way to go. And that's what's happening here. So she's going to respond. Verse 7. So Hosea's wife, she will pursue her lovers, but not overtake them. So she'll have nowhere to go, but she's going to try to sin. And she's going to pursue her lovers and not overtake them. She shall seek them, but shall not find them. Then she'll say, I can't go please myself. So I will go and return to my first husband, for it was better for me then than now. Now she's not going back to him in repentance. She's going back because she's got nowhere else to go. And she's just going back to use him. Okay? And then it says in the next verse, it says, because she didn't know that it was I who gave her her grain and her wine and the oil, and who lavished her with silver and gold, which they used for Baal. And what Hosea is talking about here is more the people of Israel. And Gomer, he's basically saying, you know what? She'll continue to try to be unfaithful. She won't find satisfaction. So then she's going to come home. But not for good, not in repentance, because she still wants to give herself. And this is what she was doing, and this is what Israel was doing. They were taking the blessings that God gave them and attributing them to other gods. That's what Gomer was doing. She was taking all the blessings that Hosea was lavishing on her and using that to go worship these other gods. It would be like a husband and wife. A husband gets a wife a beautiful ring, and she goes and takes it and pawns it so she can live it up. That's basically what Hosea is saying and God's saying, that God gave the people of Israel all these great gifts and land and blessed them and all of this, and they're going to these Baals, and Baal was the god of fertility at that time, or god of great production in the land and things, and they were attributing all their success to that god and using all that God gave them to worship these other gods with. So you get that picture? Sort of what we do in sin. When we take all the great things God gave us and we pervert it and use it for ourselves. And that's what's happening here with Hosea and Gomer and God's people and God. So verse 9. So here's how Hosea and here's how God responds. He says, therefore, I will take back my grain in its time, my wine in its season, and will take away my wool and my flax, which were to cover her nakedness. Now I will uncover her lewdness in the sight of her lovers, and no one shall rescue her out of my hands. So here's what Hosea is saying, and what God's saying is, all right, she's going to do this. She's not getting anything then. Then she's going to wake up. And that's what basically is happening here. God says, I'm going to take this away from them so that they see that it was me who supplied that and how good they really had it. And what they're going to find is all these other people they were relying in, they never loved her. They just used her. And that's what the idea of that he's going to uncover her lewdness in the sight of her lovers, and no one shall rescue her. No one will come to her aid. He's going to show her and say, see, she's been unfaithful. And the people will say, oh yeah, that's a shame. Instead of saying, no, we love her. No, they don't. And that's how sin is for us. And we can go out and we can try to please ourselves. And you know what? We're going to find emptiness there. Because only God fulfills. So this is this prophecy that God's making. And it sounds horrible, and it's awful, isn't it? That it's going to uncover, and then she's going to be made a mockery of in public because she strayed like this. And you're like, man, this is harsh. Well, now it begins to turn very soon, but not quite. It gets a little worse. Verse 11 is what it says. I will put an end to all her mirth, her feasts, her new moons, her Sabbath, and appointed feasts, and lay waste to her vines and fig trees, of which she said. So not only is she going to be mocked, but now her life's going to fall apart. It's going to begin to spiral out of control. Have you ever been there in sin? You start to spiral out of control? And that's what's going to happen. And then she'll say, these are my wages which my lovers have given me, and I will make them a forest, and the beasts of the field will devour them. So then all those things she's been trusting in are going to go away and going to be wasted. All those things she thought she was building up are going to be gone. And I will punish her for the feast days of the Baals, when she burnt offerings to them and adorned herself with her ring and jewelry and went after her lovers and forgot me, declares the Lord. So this is the jealousy of God now rising up and saying, you know what? Not only am I going to discipline her, but I'm going to punish her too in my jealousy, because she's taken everything I've given her, and these people have taken everything I've given her and given it to someone else. And because she forgot me. And you're like, man, this is what we're afraid of. We're going to do something so bad that God's going to turn his back on us. Have you ever been there? Now comes the turn. Just like in chapter 1, there was a turn. Here there's a turn. There's a therefore or a but. Guess what? God's one-way covenant, his faithfulness, his enduring love will always triumph. Just as it does here in Hosea, verse 14. Therefore, behold, I will allure her and bring her into the wilderness and speak tenderly to her. And there I will give her her vineyards and make the valley of Achor a door of hope. And there shall be answer. There shall she answer as in the days of her youth, as at the time when she came out of Egypt. What's God talking about here? He's talking about Israel. And he's saying, here's what I'm going to do though. I'm going to take her out and I'm going to allure her. I'm going to speak pleasantly to her, or tell her how much I love her. Tell the people that have turned their back on me how much I love them, and I'm going to take them out in the wilderness. Now, the wilderness here isn't a bad thing. It's actually a good thing. When he's talking about the wilderness, he's going to take them back to the wilderness when they first went out of Egypt as a nation. You remember that? When they were following God, and God was providing all their needs, and that two-way covenant came, and they said, yes, God, we will serve you. Do you remember all that time? Joshua, who this day will you serve? We will serve the Lord. Oh, man. So he says, I'm going to take you back out there, and you're going to fall in love with me all over again. Bring you back to this first love, and give her vineyards, and make the valley of Achor a door of hope. I want to pause just for a second, right, on the valley of Achor, because there's a lot of symbolism in Hosea, and this valley of Achor is really neat. The valley of Achor goes all the way back to when the children of Israel first went into the promised land. You remember they went and conquered Jericho, and they defeated Jericho, remember, and they walked around the walls, and the walls caved in. And God told the people, I want you to destroy everything. Everything. Don't take anything out of the city. And one guy snuck a lot of stuff out. Do you remember him? His name was Achan. and he snuck some of the gold and took it back in his tent and hid it. And then the people went to go after another city, Ai, which was a small city, and here they got defeated. And Joshua goes to God and goes, what gives? And God says, there's sin amongst you. Somebody disobeyed me, and his name is Achan. So they went to this guy, Achan, and said, how could you sin against the Lord? And he said, well, I just did what I wanted to do. I was unfaithful to God. So do you know what they did with Achan? They drug him out into the valley of Achor, and they stoned him and his family. And from that day, it was called the Valley of Achor, the Valley of Trouble was what it was called. Now, catch this. Valley of Achor, symbolism of unfaithfulness and a stoning. Now, take you to Hosea's day. Do you know what the penalty for adultery was in Jewish law? The woman was to be stoned. That was the punishment that awaits her because of her unfaithfulness. But what does God say in his love? I will make for you this valley of trouble that symbolizes a stoning and punishment. I will make it a door of hope. You see what God's doing here? He's saying, although you've sinned and you've been unfaithful to me, I am going to woo you back, and I am going to bring you to myself, and I'm going to make that which was ugly, beautiful. Pretty neat, isn't it? Now, verse 16 goes on. It says, and in that day, declares the Lord, you will call me my husband, and no longer will you call me my Baal, or no longer will you try to use me. You will love me. For I will remove the names of Baals from her mouth, and they shall be remembered by name no more. And what that means is when this happens, they're going to return to God and worship him alone. And actually, this worship is going to be in newness. There's going to be a new relationship happening here, like they never knew that sin before. So picture this relationship. Have you ever been in a relationship with somebody and they've hurt you? And then when trouble comes, like maybe a year later, somebody will bring that up and say, yeah, but you did that. No, that's what God's saying. It will never come up again. It is clean. Pretty neat, isn't it? And that's what God will do. And then when that happens, it goes on further. And it says, I will make for them a covenant on that day. Now there's a new covenant going to happen here. With the beasts of the fields, the birds of the air, the creeping things on the ground, I will abolish the bow and the sword and the war from the land, and I will make you lie down in safety. You know what he's saying? This new covenant is going to be a covenant of peace that's going to be ushered in. Do you know when that was ushered in? Through Jesus. He said, I'm going to bring Jesus, and it's going to be this new covenant, my covenant with you. And verse 19 is really neat. It says, and I will betroth you to me forever. I will betroth you to me in righteousness and in justice and steadfast love and mercy. I will betroth you to me in faithfulness, and you shall know the Lord. Now, there's some neat things happening here. When we think betrothal back in this day, basically what that was marked by was the groom would come to the bride and offer what's called a dowry. Have everybody ever heard of a dowry? It was basically a payment that was made to make this bride his. It was something that the groom paid, nothing that the bride paid. And this is the picture that God's creating. I'm going to betroth. I'm going to pay a price for you. And here is what's going to be made up of this price: righteousness. God says, I will pay righteousness for you, or perfection. Sure, you could try to be perfect yourself. You're never going to do it, so I'm going to give it to you. I'm going to give you justice. Because of sin, a penalty must be paid, right? That penalty is death. So what does God, our groom, say? He says, in betrothing you, I'm going to give you that. I'm going to give you justice. How did he do that? He made a way, didn't he? Through Jesus. And then he says, I'm going to give you steadfast love, unending love, and mercy. That we even take those times where you mess up and still love you through it. Isn't that neat? And then through all that, they are brought to intimacy with God. That's what know means. This is the biblical know. You know, where you hear that and Adam knew Eve, or meant was intimate with her. That's what know means here, the idea of this. So it says, and you shall know the Lord your God. God's going to do this work to draw us close and make us his so that we can be intimate with him. What a reversal, isn't it? What a reversal in what's happening. It's paid for by God, not us. And then at the end of chapter 2, it does the same thing that happened at the beginning of chapter 2 and the end of chapter 1. It says, in that day declares the Lord, I will answer the heavens, they shall answer the earth, and the earth shall answer with grain and wine and oil, all these things. And they shall answer Jezreel. Remember, God sows. And I will sow for myself a land and have mercy on no mercy, or ami on lo ami. And will say, not my people, you are my people. And you shall say, you are my God. Isn't that neat? So this is about this broken relationship because of our unfaithfulness and what God does to restore all of that. This is a picture of God totally changing Hosea, changing Gomer from who she was, unfaithful, a whore, to being loved. God changing his unfaithful people, Israel, to being his. God changing us, who are unfaithful, to be his forever. It's pretty neat, isn't it? You see, this is God's love for us. This is Hosea's love for Gomer, God's love for us. Those who tend to be unfaithful, going our own paths, ascribing what he gives to others, his love brings us back so that we can be his again. And that brings us to our truth this morning. Real quickly, every week we have a theme, and here's our truth from our message, from this passage. God's costly love spares no expense to make us his. You see, this chapter is all about the cost that God pays to make us his. And he spares no expense to make us his. So as we look at this, what do we learn from this? What is it? It's neat that God brings Gomer back and brings the people of Israel back. But how does that change the way we live? Well, to know what this means, I want to real quickly just highlight how God spends his love and what we learn from this passage of how God spends his love. There's a cost to love. And this is what God spends on his love. First of all, he spends his love pursuing. Just as Hosea pursued Gomer, just as God pursued Israel, just as God pursues us. When we walk away from him. Do you remember last week we were talking about Zacchaeus and when Jesus went to Zacchaeus' house? This is in Luke chapter 19. And he sat at the table with Zacchaeus and he says, you know what? The Son of Man has come to seek and save the lost. God became man to come for those that were lost. You see, God spends his love, and that's costly. God doesn't need to come to us. He doesn't need to pursue us. He could sit back and he could say, you know what? I'll just wait till they finally wake up and they'll come to me. I'll wait till they buck up and, you know, want to finally find that, oh, maybe I've had enough, so now I'm going to come back. God doesn't do that. God doesn't say, you know what? I'm perfect. Let them be perfect so they can be around me. No, you know what he does? He says, I'm going to go to them. In sin, we're the ones who leave him, yet he doesn't wait for us to come back. He puts our offense aside, not in the sense that he forgets our offense, but that he sees us as more valuable than holding on to an offense. He sees that relationship more valuable than holding on to an offense, so that he comes and he pursues us in love. And he pleads with us, just as Hosea pleaded with Gomer, and comes to woo us back to himself. Isn't that wild? How many times do we hold on an offense and a relationship falls because we said, well, we're going to hold on to this and let them pay for a while? Now, you know what love does? Love pays a price, and love pays a price to pursue. And that's what God's love does. And do you know what that means then for us, right here and right now? God's pursuing love means that we're never too lost that God can't see and God can't find us. Do you know that? There's no place that we can go. There's no depth that we can go to or run away far enough that God's not going to be right there. He's going to follow us. He's going to pursue us so that when we turn around and we reach out for help, he's right there. Isn't that wild? I think that's really neat. So pursuing love is one way God spends his love. Another way God spends his love is through disciplining. And you say, wow, that's love? Disciplining is love? Yeah. As we said earlier, there's a difference between punishment and discipline. And most of what this passage is about, it's about discipline over punishment. You see, punishment is a cost that must be paid, the price of sin, so that you hurt. consequences. It's meant, but it's meant to punish. But discipline is meant to help us see, own, and reject sin. Discipline helps mature us. Part of what God was doing with Israel was punishing their infidelity. There were consequences to that. But most of it was disciplining them, protecting them from sin, placing a hedge around them, exposing them so that they would wake up and see, I have nothing else but God. He was there all along. Everyone else rejected me. And sometimes we see discipline as harsh or bad, don't we? Say, I don't want to be disciplined. Oh. But you know, from God's view, it's loving. If you're a parent, you see that, don't you? It's not easy, but it's loving. I remember when I was a kid, my dad would spank me, and you know, he'd always do that. This hurts me more than it hurts you. No, it doesn't. Trust me, it doesn't. But then when I was a parent, I understood what he was saying. Why would I take that which I love and do this? Well, so that they could mature, so that they can see, hey, you don't want to do this. Book of Hebrews says it like this. In Hebrews chapter 12, for the Lord disciplines the ones he loves and chastises every son whom he receives. It is for discipline that you have to endure. God is treating you as sons. For what son is there whom his father does not discipline? For they disciplined us for a short time as it seemed best to them. But God disciplines us for our good, so that we may share in his holiness, so that we can look more like him. For the moment, all discipline seems painful rather than pleasant, but later it yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it. You see, discipline is costly. It's costly for God to discipline us, to go through that. I mean, God could go the cheap route, and he could say, you know what, I'm just going to let them do whatever they want. That wouldn't be showing love, would it? You see, God doesn't let us. He lets us go to a point, but then he says, you know, I care too much for them. I want to, because I have a relationship with them. I want to help them grow. And one way he does that is through discipline. So discipline is a sign that God cares for us. He chooses to intervene, doing the hard work, waking us up so we can grow in him. God spends his love disciplining, and this means that we're never too rebellious that God doesn't care. Do you know that? You may think you're rebellious and you may think you're going far away. You know what? God says, no, I care too much to let you do that. That's why if you've ever been there and if you know Jesus and you sin, after a little bit, it's no longer fun, is it? It becomes hard. It becomes guilty. You know what all that is? That's because God paid a price to make us his. Because he cares. And he's going to let us know he cares. And that's the cost of discipline. And there's one more cost I want to talk to you about. And that's God spends his love renewing. That's what we see here with the second half of chapter 2. This renewal that goes on with Gomer. This renewal that goes on with the people of Israel and this promise that we have. You see, it's renewal over restoration. How many of you guys like watching like some of these reality shows on TV? I love the car shows. You ever watch the car shows where they take a car and it's all beat up and they fix it up and then they sell it? Do you ever watch any of those? I love watching those shows, and I love watching them fix up the cars. And it's kind of neat. You know, they clean up some of the rust, and they make it run again, and then they go try to sell it for a profit. You know what that's called? That's called restoring. There's one show, though, that I love even more than that. It's called Graveyard Cars, if you've ever watched that. And what that show is it's the ultimate car geek show, because this guy, he only works with Dodges, but he takes these old junkers of cars, and he doesn't restore them. You know what he does? He makes them new. He goes and he searches model numbers of parts and everything to get the original of everything, so that when he's done with it, it's not a restored car, it's a brand new car, just like it came off of the assembly line. And it takes him like a lot longer to do that. But what happens is, he doesn't restore it, he renews it. And that's what God does with us. He doesn't merely restore us. You know what God does with us? He renews us. He makes us as if we were like we were, like he created us to be in his perfection. Isn't that neat? Doesn't make us the way we were so that we can try to be good enough for him. He makes us brand new. That's what Hosea did with his wife. Made a new relationship there. No more memory of your past unfaithfulness. There's a new covenant based on God's work that he gives. Righteousness and justice, enduring love and mercy. There's a new identity that happens because of all of that. You know what God does? God does that in himself, in Jesus. That he renews us. Our core passage here is a church. In 2 Corinthians chapter 5, he says this about Jesus. For our sake, he made him to be sin who knew no sin, so that in him, in Jesus, we can become the righteousness of God, or brand new. Then a couple verses up, it says, therefore, if anyone is in Christ, they're what? A new creation. Behold, the old has passed. Behold, the new has come. You know why? Because God renews us. He doesn't just restore us. And that's the promise we have in him. You see, God's costly love of renewing, it means that we're never too damaged, that God won't make us new. God can do that through his love for us. And that's this prophecy through Hosea. And real quick, as we look at all of this, I want to look at chapter 3 for a minute, because after all of this and understanding what all of this is about, God drives the point home graphically. And I just want to read this just so you get this in this picture of what all of this means, because I told you he had Hosea live this prophecy out. So Hosea just didn't tell what he was going to do. Now in chapter 3, he goes and does it. Look at this. And the Lord said to me, go, love a woman who is loved by another man and is an adulteress, even as the Lord loves his children of Israel, though they turn to other gods and love the cakes of raisins, which is something having to do with Baal worship. So I bought her back for 15 shekels of silver and a homer of lethek of barley. Did you hear that? Hosea went into the marketplace. His wife had sold herself to other lovers. Hosea went in front of all these people. Imagine this. Imagine all these people. They know who Hosea is. They know who his wife is. And he goes out into the public square, and he doesn't go out there to say, I can't believe you did this. He goes and says, I'm going to buy her back. I am going to pay all of her debts that she has so that she can be mine again. And I said to her, you must dwell as mine for many days. You shall not play the whore and belong to another man. So will I also be to you. So again, that's that new covenant coming again, that two-way covenant. And he said, you know what? I'm going to take you away, and you're not going to play that anymore. Or I'm going to set you out so that we can fall in love together. Now, that was coming to the nation of Israel about 50 years later, when the Assyrians come in and take them into captivity, and they were taken out of their situation, so they had no one to depend on but God, and they could fall in love again with him. That's where this happens with the nation, but this is what she did. For the children of Israel shall dwell many days without king or prince, without sacrifice or pillar, without ephod or household gods. God's going to take them away. And he puts them away to protect them so they fall in love with him. And then look at chapter 5, because chapter 5 gives us a way, in light of all this costly love of God, how do we respond to God's costly love? Chapter 5 gives us a hint. Afterward, the children of Israel shall return and seek the Lord their God and David their king, and they shall come in fear to the Lord and to his goodness in the latter days. You see, God pays a price to love us. And you may say, well, then how do we do that? How do we respond to that? Do we try to pay back? No. Here's how we do that. We can respond to God by returning to him. Which means if we're out seeking our own way, to realize all that he is for us and all that he's done for us and return. Return to that first love. And then it says you're going to seek the Lord your God. Do you know what that means? That means not only come back to him, but get to know his love more intimately. Start to grow in him. If we want to respond to God's costly love, start to grow in it. Start to grow and understand what his love is. And then he talks about you come in fear, shall come to fear the Lord your God in goodness. And fear, we can say, what, are you being afraid? No, it has the idea of being in awe of God. Because it says, in fear to his goodness. So do you know what that idea is? To worship God. We should be people who come to God and come together and say, because of Jesus, because all of what God has done for us, we can now stand with him, call ourselves his, and we worship him. You see, God's costly love should lead us to worship. And this is God's costly love that pursues, disciplines, and renews us. God's costly love spares no expense to make us his. That's the message of God's limitless love in Hosea. Next week, we'll look at chapter 4. Let's pray.